जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजन जशोरानंदना ब्रज जन रंजन यामुन तीरवनचारी यामुन तीरवनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोरनंदना ब्रज जन रंदन यशोरनंदना ब्रज जन रंदन यामुन तीरवनचारी यामुन तीरवनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तर सुत श्री श्रीमद His Divine Grace, Lacey Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go Premanande Hare Hare Bol. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 23, text 72. So this is a Sanskrit verse. Lord Chaitanya is quoting Rupa Goswami before Rupa Goswami wrote it. You find that kind of thing in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was putting the book together, he was selecting things from the Goswamis to include in his book and using them to explain the philosophy as Lord Chaitanya was presenting it. So we're in the middle now of a list of Krishna's transcendental qualities. So this is directly from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There's a whole list of the qualities of Krishna. The context of it is, this is from the southern section, or the southern ocean, of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's the second part. And it's dealing with bhava. And one of the subcategories under bhava is alambana, which means the things that within Krishna that attract rati. Rati means bhava, they're synonyms. So usually in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the word rati is used. So what excites the rati, or the emotion within the devotee, are certain aspects of Krishna. Krishna is the shelter of these things, these qualities. So that's called alambana. So in describing alambana, Srila Rupa Goswami gives all of Krishna's qualities, or not all of them, of course, 64 qualities. So this is some of the qualities, 8 different qualities appear in this particular verse. So the word meanings, vidagdha, expert in artistic enjoyment, chatura, cunning, daksha, expert, kritagya, grateful, sudrida vrittaha, firmly determined, desha, of country, kala, time, supatra, of fitness, gya, a knower, shastra chakshu, expert in the authoritative scriptures, suchihi, very clean and neat, vashi, self-controlled. Vidagdascha turodaksha, kritagya sudridha vrata. Oh, did I skip one, two? I'm missing a line here. That's interesting. Desha kala supatra gya. Shastra chakshu suchir vashi. Vidagdas chaturo daksha. Kritagya sudrida vrata. Desha kala supatra gya. Shastra chakshu shuchir vashi. Vidagdas chaturo daksha. Nigagya sudrida vrata. Desha kala supatra gya. Nityir vashi. Yatagya sudridha vrata Vishakala supatragya Yastra chakshu shuchir vashi Vidagdashchaturodaksha Vitnagya sudhridha vrata Deshakala supatranya Shastra chakshu suchir vashi. Translation. Krishna is very expert in artistic enjoyment. He is highly cunning, expert, grateful, and firmly determined in his vows. He knows how to deal according to time, person, and country, and he sees through the scriptures and authoritative books. He is very clean and self-controlled. So there's no commentary on that. There's no purport here. So what I'm going to do is, I went to the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. Actually, in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, first they're all listed. And then after some general verses, then it goes through each one of these qualities, these 64 qualities, and explains something about them. You may remember in the Nectar of Devotion, there's that chapter, Qualities of Krishna, further explained. So there's a short definition generally given of each of these words, and then some example is given how they relate to Krishna, how Krishna personifies these things or exhibits these different things. So the first word here is vidagdha. Vidagdha, you may be familiar with this word. Lord Rupa Goswami wrote a book called Vidagdha Madhava, which is about Radha and Krishna's pastimes. So Prabhupada translated here as expert in artistic enjoyment. So there is a one word for that is called aesthete. Someone who is an aesthete, A-E-S-T-H-E-T-E, or has the quality of being ascetic. It means someone who's, we might say, a lover of the arts today, someone who knows how to enjoy music and, you know, beautiful things, basically. Nature, sometimes nature is included in the list of what an ascete appreciates, the finer things of life, finer enjoyments of life. So Krishna is called ascete. That's the first one here. Translation here, but this is Bhanu Swami's translation from the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu. One whose mind is absorbed in artistic pastimes is praised as vidagdha or aesthete. And let's see. This is from Prabhupada's purport to 5.2.17, where he talks about the word. He says, one who is expert in this art of flattery is called vidagdha. So the context of that is the beginning of the fifth canto is King Agnidra. He wants to have children, so this heavenly goddess, Apsara, comes to him and he flirts with her, says kinds of things and makes her laugh and entices her and attracts her mind and so on. So in that context, this King Agnidra, he's called Vidagdha there. So it gives you a sense of Krishna, of course, flirting. one of the qualities of a Vidagdha is they're good at flirting. That kind of thing. So this is a Prabhupada in the... I've taken how Prabhupada translates in the Nectar Devotion. He says, one who can talk and dress himself very artistically is called Vidagdha. So we hear how beautifully Krishna dresses himself. And even as Lord Vishnu... I came across it recently. It was quite surprising, actually. Maybe this is a... It was a context, but... Of course, one thing is... Vishnu, he's covered with all kinds of gems and bracelets and armlets and anklets and practically everywhere he's got jewels on his body, necklaces and so on, garlands. And so in this particular, in the pastime of the Brahmavimohan Leela, when Lord Krishna manifests all these Vishnu forms, It says they're covered from head to toe in all parts of their body, but they're being worshipped. It says they're being worshipped. So it says they're covered from head to toe with tulsi garlands. That's pretty interesting, these Vishnu forms. I thought, well, maybe it's because it's to emphasize that they're being worshipped. So in the context of the worship, everyone is, just like sometimes Prabhupada would get covered with garlands, practically his head would be practically covered. So Lord Vishnu gets covered with these tulsi garlands, at least in that particular pastime in the Bhagavatam. So that's Vidagdha. And see the next one. Here's the example. First, the example. Look how amazing Krishna, the abode of unbridled artistic pastimes, is enjoying his leisure. Krishna is composing songs and dancing. He is making riddles, playing the flute, stringing garlands, and practicing drawing. He is making lots of magic and defeats the proud at dice. So this is how Krishna entertains himself. He does all these different things. He dances, he composes songs. One thing that always strikes me, and there are different descriptions in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when devotees are happy, they don't just smile, they start dancing. We don't tend to see that kind of thing, start dancing. But that happens, and the devotees do that. So Krishna's dancing, just for no reason, he'll just start dancing. Of course, he dances with the gopis. He makes riddles. And some of these, the pastimes between Radha and Krishna and the gopis, there are all kinds of wordplay going on. Of course, he plays the flute. And there's one place where it's described that he and Balaram are singing together in a duet. And when they sing, they incorporate all of the relishable aspects all into one song. It's like you don't have to listen to a rock song, then a country song, then a classical. All of the different genres, you could say, they're all mixed in. And all of the attractive qualities, they're all present there when Krishna sings and Krishna Balaram. Just imagine hearing the singing of Krishna Balaram. Boy, that's something to aspire for, isn't it? Besides Krishna's flute. First he draws you there with his flute, then he sings for you. So he enjoys these arts here. And one of the things here, he defeats the proud at dice. So that's the kind of, it's interesting also in the Bhagavatam, a lot of times when Krishna, if somebody goes to Krishna Dwarka, what's he doing? He always seems to be playing dice. He seems to spend a lot of time playing dice. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says here, in dice, Krishna defeats the proud, or those whose false ego has grown big. So that's part of it. Part of his enjoyment is defeating the proud in dice. He feels good about that, defeating their pride. Let's see, what is it? It says, Mukunda Goswami. So there's a commentator on the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu named Mukunda Goswami. I'm trying to remember, he may be a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj, but I'm not sure. I read it somewhere, but now I can't remember. Anyway, it says, Mukunda Goswami explains that the verse, this verse we just read, implies that many of the activities listed were performed simultaneously. This shows Krishna's extraordinary genius. So the next one is Chatura. Now, Prabhupada translated it here as cunning. And I thought, usually it's translated as clever, actually. That's the way, I think Prabhupada translated it that way in the NOD. And anyway, he translated it here as cunning, and I thought, well, cunning, isn't that usually kind of, has a bad connotation? But I looked it up in the dictionary, and it does. It's also a neutral word. It's not only a bad thing. So anyway, Prabhupada translated it here like that. Bhanuswami translates it as clever. He says, a chatura is one who brings about a solution to many problems simultaneously. And Prabhupada says something similar. He says, a person who can perform various types of work at once is clever. They say that's a quality that women have more strong than men, is that multitasking. They're able to do several things at the same time because it's part of raising a family. You have to be good at that kind of thing. So this is called clever, when you can do several things simultaneously. So the example given here, Krishna looked splendid as he gave bliss to a herd of cows, So he's doing, you'll see how he's doing several things. Krishna looked splendid as he gave bliss to a herd of cows by singing in cowherd songs. He sings to the cows. As he pleased the gopis by the waves of his sidelong glance, and as he gladdened his friends by his courageous wrestling, all these actions created fear in Arishtasura. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, well, actually, first Jiva Goswami, both Vishwanath and Jiva Goswami have commentaries on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In Bhanuswami's edition, he has both of their commentaries, and also Mukunda Swami, and then he himself sometimes makes comments, Bhanuswami, to clarify things. So Jiva Goswami says, Parabhati refers to particular songs composed by cowherds. So they have special songs they created just for singing to the cows. Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary, the fact that Krishna sang and did the other activities fearlessly with the demon in sight, in other words, see, it ended here, all these actions created fear in Arishtasura, that was the verse. The fact that Krishna sang and did the other activities fearlessly with the demon in sight shows that he bestowed fearlessness to his cows, gopis, and friends, so with all the things that he was doing. By the way, these are all Sanskrit verses that I'm reading as these examples. Most of these are written by Rupa Goswami himself. Sometimes he quotes from other places to make examples. He does examples of all, you know, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is very technical. It has all these different categories involved in devotion. And he gives examples, and many of them he composes himself. So he's visualizing these scenes and creating these verses. So the next one here is Daksha. Daksha is skillful. So we're all familiar with this word in reference to Daksha Maharaj, and as I think Prabhupada would point out, he's expert in sex because that's his service, actually. He's supposed to create population. So anyway, the general word Daksha generally just means skillful, or expert is also translated. So it says, the translation by Bhanuswami is a person who performs a difficult task very quickly is called Daksha, or an expert. And Prabhupada says, any person who can quickly execute a very difficult task is called expert. So we see Prabhupada is just translating it also. So an example from the 10th canto. So this is actually from the Bhagavatam, 10:59-17. So this is about Krishna fighting with Narakasura, Bhaumasura. Lord Hari then struck down all the missiles and weapons that the enemy soldiers threw at him. O hero of the Kurus, destroying each and every one of them with three sharp arrows. So Krishna was certainly expert in fighting. That comes out in the, of course, Krishna's Dwaraka Leela. So many fighting with demons with using his weapons. In Vrindavan, he tended to just use his hands. He brought out his weapons for that. Of course, that happens at the beginning when they're in Krishna Balaram Mathura. They get attacked by Durasanda. So they get Krishna Balaram are talking about what to do. Said, well, okay, we're here on a mission. We're supposed to kill all these demons. So then their chariots and weapons just descend from the sky. And Krishna says, okay, it's time for us to get to work here. So then they start using their weapons. Just like we have Balaram, he often has a club here, but actually in Vrindavan, Balaram doesn't use a club in Vrindavan. But anyway, so the next, let's see, that was the example. Yeah, so here's another example. This is, let's see, so Rupa Goswami must have written this one himself. O killer of the Ugga demon, please dance only with me. Killer of the Ugga demon, of course, is Krishna. O killer of the Ugga demon, please dance only with me. Desiring to fulfill this request of each gopi, Krishna displayed a wave of expertise in his movements and his play. Each of the gopis, without doubt, saw him by her side. So this is definitely an example of being expert. All the gopis wanted to dance with Krishna, so what did he do? He just replicated himself, so each gopi had him by her side. So the next one here is called Kritagya, grateful. It's interesting because Krita means to do or make, and Gya means to know. So, but it's called grateful. It's translated as grateful. So I guess the idea is that you know you're conscious of somebody doing something that pleases you. Seems to be the context of how it's interesting, because I looked in the word for word in the Veda base, and it's that this is a standard Sanskrit for grateful is this Kritagya. Translation: a grateful person is one who acknowledges others' services. Prabhupada says, any person who is conscious of his friend's beneficent activities and never forgets that person's service is called grateful. And an example from the Mahabharata, Krishna is speaking, though I was far away, Draupadi called out to me, O Govinda, that call has created an ever-increasing debt that does not leave my heart. So he feels gratitude to Draupadi just because she called out to him. That pleases him so much he feels grateful when someone calls out to him. That's nice, huh? Another example, Krishna, remembering Jambavan's service in the distant past, married his daughter and thus gave him, Jambavan, respect. Since the well-bred never forget even a little service rendered to them, what then can be said of Krishna, who is the crest jewel among all men? Jiva Goswami's commentary. By saying, remembering Jambavan's service in the distant past, the verse implies that Krishna didn't consider the heavy offense committed at present due to Jambavan's attacking Krishna. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, oh, this is a verse from the fourth canto. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, he becomes dependent on his devotees. He does not care for the goddess of fortune, nor for the kings and demigods who are after the favors of the goddess of fortune. Where is that person who is actually grateful and will not worship the personality of Godhead? So I threw this in there. This is calling upon us to be grateful. In other words, the idea is that, you know, the first 50 qualities, it says that we can have them in minute proportion ourselves because we're part of Krishna. So when we see these things, we naturally think, or at least some of them, gee, I should develop this quality myself, because it's an honorable quality. It's a wonderful quality, attractive quality, pleasing quality. So grateful, of course, to be grateful is a very important quality for a devotee. I always like to make the connection that to be grateful for something, first you have to appreciate it. When you appreciate it, the value of it, then you're grateful for having received it. So much of what we're doing, our Shravanam Kirtanam, it's about that. We're trying to appreciate what we've been given by Krishna, by the spiritual master, the mercy that we've received. Then we have a sense of gratitude, and we want to reciprocate with that. So these are examples of Krishna. Krishna has that quality. He becomes very grateful for whatever the devotee does for him. So the next one is Sudrida Vrata, which means he keeps his vows. Translation, a person true to his promises and to his perpetual vows is called Sudrida Vrata, or fixed in vows. Here's an example. Oh, it says, being true to one's promises is illustrated in Harivamsa. If you don't know, Harivamsa is sort of like an addendum to the Mahabharata. And it's about, Harivamsa means Hari's family, basically. So it's about Krishna's life. It's more or less a summary of Krishna's life, Harivamsa. It's quoted a lot, Jiva Goswami, and both Jiva Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, they both quote it quite a bit. They definitely accept it as an authoritative literature. And it's not a small book either. It's available. It's been translated. It's several volumes. So anyway, this is from the Harivamsa. O Narada, so this is about Sudrida Vrata, one who is fixed in his vows. O Narada, all the demigods, Gandharvas, Rakshasas, Asuras, Yakshas, and Pandagas are trying to make me break my promise, but they cannot do so. May your promise remain true as well. So I don't know what the context of this is. There wasn't an explanation why these personalities, entities are trying to get Krishna to break his promise. I'm not sure what that's all about. Another example. Very easily, Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, made Indra bereft of the Parijata tree and pleased Satyabhama. He also made Yudhishthira devoid of enemies and pleased Draupadi. In this way, he fulfilled his promises. So he made promises to all of these personalities, maybe just a general promise also to protect them in different situations. So there's a story behind all of these. Of course, Krishna has promised, but he always protects his devotees. So he protected them from Kamsa, protected Indra, so on. So next one is, this is another example. O Krishna, you vow that your devotee will never suffer, and you have illustrated that by performing the difficult task of lifting Govardhan Hill. So Krishna, of course, the Brijbasis are always calling on Krishna. He's always, bad things are happening, demons are coming, and so Krishna is always protecting them. So he himself says, I've made the promise that I will always protect the Brijbasis. So of course he did that by lifting Govardhan Hill. Now there's another famous promise of Krishna. Actually, it comes out in the Jiva Goswami refers to this several times in the Sandarbhas, that Krishna promised to return to Vrindavan. So he uses this as one of the bases for him arguing that Krishna did return to Vrindavan. We often hear that he never returned and the gopis were always lamenting in separation from him. But Jiva Goswami presents different arguments and quotes from different scriptures and even from the Bhagavatam to explain that actually Krishna did return to Vrindavan because he said, I will return. He said it at least one time. He said it was at Kurukshetra when he met with the gopis there at Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse. He said, I will come to see you. So because he made that promise, then he had to keep it, and he did. So the next one, Desha Kala Supatragya, knowledgeable of proper time, place, and person. That's the word-for-word translation. And in the translation, the expert judge of place, time, and person is one who performs actions suitable to all of those. Prabhupada's translation in the NOD is essentially the same. So here's an illustration of this quality. There is no time compared to the moonlit autumn night, no place of amusement in the three worlds that equals Vrindavan, and no lotus-eyed women that could be compared to the young gopis of Braja. Considering all this, my heart longs to taste for the taste of the rasa dance. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this statement occurs in a discussion when Krishna speaks to Uddhava in Mathura. So this is also portrayed at the very beginning of the 29th chapter, the 10th canto, of the first chapter of the rasa, the five chapters on the rasa dance. Actually, it's quite interesting, the commentary, Vaishnava commentaries to that first verse of the 10th canto, chapter 29th chapter, because it's described there how it's really the autumn season in a sense, because Krishna, who's Atmarama, he doesn't need to enjoy anything he can enjoy within himself, but because of the situation, he was, you might say, enticed or inspired to enjoy with the gopis. So it's described there that actually that Krishna he sometimes turns things over to the Leela Shakti. So the Leela Shakti made the arrangement that Krishna would be inspired to enjoy. So it says that Krishna was I forget what the technical term is. It says something like he was the object in this situation. He was being moved himself to do something. So anyway, the idea is this rasa dance. The
this whole setting, the beautiful moonlit night and the beautiful girls and the Vrindavan and so on. So this is an example of Krishna saying, now it's time to really enjoy because this time, place, and circumstance. So the next one here is Shastra Chakshu. So this is a phrase I think many of you are familiar with. Krishna's Shastra Chakshu. Sees through the eyes of scripture. Prabhupada says, a person who acts exactly according to the tenets of scripture is called Shastra Chakshu. Then the scriptures became the eye. This is from Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. The scriptures became the eyes of Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa. Oh, Krishna is the enemy of Kamsa to evaluate something. His lotus eyes, however, exist only to bewilder the young women. So the idea is, I think one of the commentators says this is a kind of a joke. Says, Krishna's eyes are, Krishna always sees through the eyes of the scripture, except when he's looking at the gopis. Things change there. So let's see. Next one is Suchi, pure. Just a couple more. Pure. A person who is Suchi or pure, I think Prabhupada said clean, right? Is of two types, Pavana and Vishuddha. Pavana is one who destroys sin. And Vishuddha is one who is without faults. So these are two of the definitions of Shuchi as pure, able to destroy sin and without faults. And Prabhupada says it also. There are two kinds of supreme purity. When one type is possessed, one is able to deliver a sinful person. When the other type is possessed, one does not do anything which is impure. And then we have an example. One who destroys sin is illustrated in the Padma Purana. With intellect purified by faith and with all sincerity, please worship Krishna, an ocean of good qualities, who is the acme of transcendental glory and who purifies those who purify others. How wonderful! Just by rising in one's heart, even the semblance of his name destroys the heap of grievous sins, just as the dawn dispels all darkness. So this is a nice example of how Krishna has these qualities in supreme amounts, in perfect full amount. So not only does he purify, just his name itself can purify all sin. So the last one in this from the verse today, Vashi, self-controlled. Yeah, control, the Sanskrit word for control is vasha. Comes up often in the Bhagavatam. One who controls his senses is called vashi, or self-controlled. And the illustration. This is illustrated in Bhagavatam 1.11.36. The beautiful smiles and furtive glances of these remarkable women were all spotless and signified their deep love. They could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration. The other queens who approached Krishna with their smiles and glances could not agitate the senses of the Lord by their tricks. So both Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath give fairly long, not long, but several paragraphs. No, I won't read them. Commentaries on this. The basic idea is that Krishna is self-controlled. And it's not that he was lusting after these women. And so even though we hear things that talk about, you know, the attractiveness of the gopis, or the, of course, you know, in a sense, Krishna is attracted, of course, but he's not attracted in a sexual way, in a lusty way. He's attracted by their prema. That's what he's attracted by. That's a different thing. Actually, Vishwanath, in the beginning of his commentary, he says, the idea is that these best of women could not conquer Krishna, vimahitum. Could not Krishna conquer, that's vimahitum, Krishna's senses with their tricks, but they could do so with their prema. Okay, I'll stop here. Anyone like to ask or add anything? No. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Oh, okay. We got Madhumati came in under the wire.
There has to be some comment or question after a person gives class. Anyway, I was thinking when you were talking about how when they're happy or they dance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been, Sesha Prabhu and I have been reading CC, and we were noticing, first of all, that all the people that Lord Chaitanya had as the main dancers, they were all older people.
Hmm.
Advaita mm-hmm. Acharya, Shivas.
Oh,
Thakur,
in the kirtan parties.
In the kirtan party.
Uh-huh.
And then not only that, I don't know if Sesha Prabhu remembers or not, but there was some part where Lord Chaitanya did something, maybe accepted the prasadam, I forget exactly what, but Advaita Acharya started dancing.
Yeah.
And we were discussing how people dance.
Well, he danced when Nityananda threw rice at him.
That's right. They
were having their little mock battle.
Yeah, so he was dancing. Yeah, so you see Advaita Acharya, who's, I think, probably the oldest one of all.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is always expression of in dance, you know, happiness showing with the dancing. I think that's pretty amazing, actually.
It shows how spontaneously happy they were.
Yeah.
You know, and that just start dancing.
it's almost a quality like of a child. You see that a young child would start dancing. Jumping up and down or whatever. So devotee's heart is childlike, you know, and so it's just, yeah, simpleness, simplicity, happiness, you know. It's nice quality.
Because everyone's happy in Goloka Vrindavan, that's why he said every step is a dance. So they're always dancing. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, good morning. Thank you for a wonderful class. One of my favorite parts was when you were talking about all the skills Krishna was having and him and Balaram singing together. And I was thinking about in Krishna book when it talks about they go to their brahmacharis and they go to Gorakul, and I think they learn
64 arts.
64 skills in 64 days or something like that. So I was wondering, is did Krishna have all these learned skills while he was here? Does he already have them? And then
he already has them. It's just part of his. When he comes here, he puts on a play, basically, and so he does different things. It's a dramatic performance, and he has his reasons for doing each of these things. One thing is that he wanted to show that one should go to the Gurukul. So that those things were taught in the Gurukul. So naturally, it's just showed like that. Actually, it's described, I forget the metaphor, but it's something like, you know, Krishna was the ocean of all of these arts, and Sandipani Muni was just basically delivering from the ocean of Krishna back to Krishna. How did Sandipani Muni know all of these things? That all comes from Krishna. He's the source of all knowledge and the source of all skills and all expertise and so on. So Sandipani Muni is just, you know, in the course of the Leela, he's giving it again to Krishna, what is already Krishna's. Actually, I have many things like that. You'll hear there are stories like, you know, how Krishna got this weapon or something like that. You know, but he always has these things. He has them eternally. Or like the conch, there's a story when Krishna recovered in the context of that same pastime, how he repaid his spiritual master by bringing back his son who had drowned in the ocean. So Krishna went into the ocean and killed this Panchajana, and then he took the body of it and made it his conch, Panchajanya conch. So it's not like that was the beginning of Krishna's association with his conch. No, it's eternal. But in the Leela, sometimes these stories come out where things have a beginning, partly because we are in the world where everything is involved with time, so we want to know what the beginning was. So that's a lot sometimes how these things are given like that. So how did Krishna learn these things? Well, he went to the Gurukul. Even Lord Chaitanya also, of course, he knows everything. He doesn't have to go to school, but he did, of course. That's all part of his... And these things are very relishable. Devotees like hearing how the Lord is doing these things because they do them all. The Lord in his different avatars, he does these things in very attractive ways. So we hear about them and the stories come out and there's something for us to remember and meditate on. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.